Max Kellerman is with us almost every Tuesday. Missed him last week because of all the coverage you had of the Washington football team's Monday night game, but you hear him every morning here on ESPN 630 with Keyshawn Johnson and Jay Williams, and you watch him in the afternoon on This Just In on ESPN, and I have been watching you and listening to you for years, so I was stunned this morning when I saw a response to a tweet that I put out promoting that you're going to be on the show with this. Wait, what? Max, the biggest Washington hater on D.C. airwaves? I have to tune in to hear what he's going to say. You're not a D.C. hater, are you?
No, I'm not a D.C. hater. I mean, I hate the Washington football team. I'm a Giants fan. I hate the Cowboys, the Eagles, and the Washington football team. How would you have it?
Yeah.
Like, don't you guys hate the Giants?
Well, you know, we don't hate the Giants as much as we hate the Cowboys here. And I think the Cowboys are the universal hate in
100%.
The division. Yeah.
100%. You hate the Cowboys the most. And then as a Giants fan, I hate the Eagles the second most, mainly because they beat us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate you guys the third most. That's
yeah.
Right. But I certainly hate the Washington football team, of course.
You know what I got an understanding of when I worked in New York for about 5 years was Mets and Yankees. Outside of New York, a lot of people think, oh, you're a fan of the Mets and you're a fan of the Yankees. They're in different leagues. No problem. No, if you're a Yankee fan, you hate the Mets. And if you're a Met fan, you hate the Yankees, right?
I rooted for the Red Sox in 86.
There you go.
Okay, I'm a Yankees fan. And by the way, there was a chant, which I cannot repeat on the radio, that I basically grew up in the bleachers in Yankee Stadium, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a chant that, let's say you were playing some team in the right fielder, whoever the right fielder was, Jesse Barfield or whoever, and you'd say, at the end of this vile chant, right, you'd say, Barfield sucks because he'd be playing right field. Toronto sucks because that's who he's playing for. No, excuse me. You start with Met suck,
mm-hmm.
then Boston, then Toronto, then whoever the right fielder was, then box seats suck, right?
Yeah.
And then that side, meaning of the bleachers, suck. And then you did a 360 and said you all suck. But the point of all that was the Red Sox, the Mets came first ahead of the Red Sox. I think after 9/11, that changed because
yeah.
there was a sense that New York. But absolutely, if you're a Yankees fan, you hate the Mets and vice versa.
Yeah. So, you know, rivalries are good. They're fun. I mean, you don't want to have fights in the stands and some of the ugly
right.
stuff that goes with it. But that's part of being a fan, for sure.
Right. And as you get older, you understand that more and more. Like,
yeah.
It's not that serious. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Last night, we had a weather game. And football is the only sport that really has it because, you know, baseball, they don't play in the rain, and hockey and basketball are played indoors. I love what happened last night, and I was talking about this before you came on. With the way the NFL is going, it's a financial juggernaut. It seems like every bad weather city could someday have a dome stadium. Something to me would be lost in that. How do you feel about that?
100%. But, you know, the world changes, and a lot of times we have to ask ourselves, do we simply love it because we're attached to it,
mm-hmm.
or do we love it because it's good? Is it good because we're attached to it, or is it actually intrinsically good?
Yeah.
Probably cold weather stuff that we would lose, guys like you, me, and other generations of fans who, you know, there was something to that cold weather game, that time of year, Thanksgiving, Christmas. It's snowing, it's cold, the frozen tundra, right?
Yep.
Soldier Field, all those kind of – yeah, you do lose that. But I don't know, what do you actually lose? You lose the kind of sentimental attachment that guys like us have to it, or do you lose something that is in fact superior to just playing it in good conditions? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, well, I think what you see with the NFL, they know it and they like it. You know, this game didn't have to be a Monday night game. You know, this yeah. could have been an afternoon game on a Sunday. And you'll see this, you know, late in the year that they schedule these games around Christmas, hoping they're going to see snow because more people watch the games.
Well, I mean, right. And then you get to a thing that baseball has always done well, because baseball, when it was our national pastime, traded on its history very well.
Yeah.
And the fact is, football is our national pastime now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, by the way, it's not past time. Like, from a past time, it's, we are passing the time. This is how we do it, right?
Yeah.
So now that it's football, I think increasingly the NFL can trade on its histories and traditions as baseball once did, and maybe that's part of it too.
Yeah, I also look at, you know, and I know what was said last night back and forth about, you know, how much of a genius Bill Belichick is, that he ran the ball 46 times and all that. It is how you handle these weather conditions, and you'll remember this as a Giant fan. I'm on the opposite side of this, but the 1987 championship game at Giant Stadium with swirling winds when the Giants won 17-0. Washington couldn't do anything, and you know, you'll remember this too. Sean Landetta may have been the MVP of the game with punting in the wind and pinning Washington back time after time.
That's right, and yesterday's game was more like, I mean, even it was extreme even by old timey standards, but more like an old school game in that field position and scoring was at a premium,
mm-hmm.
and so the game is absolutely played differently. By the way, my favorite game. It was New York and Washington. Yeah, there was a 10-10 tie the year that the Giants lost to the Vikings in the wild card game, I want to say. I may be conflating some seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a 10-10 tie that the Giants played with Washington that was like, you know, a lot of fans nowadays would be like, oh, that game was terrible. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
I think you're talking about the 7-7 tie when Gus Frerotte
Gus
Frerotte right. banged Gus his Frerotte. Head in the wall.
Yep.
That's
yep.
the worst game we ever had. What are you talking about?
By the way, 7-7, right? Like I said 7-7 to someone the other day, like, no, or the other year. And someone said, no, that was 10-10.
Yeah.
But anyway, maybe I was right the first time. Anyway, yeah, that's right. The Gus Frerotte game.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. He was having a bad year, and he I guess he ran the ball in the end zone.
And he hits his head against the wall.
Yeah.
He's frustrated, yeah.
And he banged his head into the wall in celebration, knocked himself out of the game. Yeah, and Jeff Hostetler had to finish up, and they were terrible. Norv Turner, who was never a really good press conference guy, had the line of the night. He said, I never thought I had to coach a guy not to bash his head into the wall, which was actually the best.
Guess again, Norv.
That was the best line. We're talking to Max Kellerman. Let's get to the Antonio Brown situation. What happens there? He's now on suspension, so they don't have to do anything right now. But the coach said, if he screws up again, he's gone. He's a Tom Brady favorite. He was crucial to them in winning the Super Bowl last year. This is not college sports or high school sports where you have to have a great example and all that. Does Bruce Arians bring him back when he's eligible to play?
Yeah, he does. Number one, Tom pushes the ball down the field more with Antonio Brown on the field. He's still their best receiver, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on the team with Godwin and Evans. He's really, really good still. And they're undefeated with Antonio Brown on the field. You know, that said, his not being on the field, Brady kind of spread it around more and seemed to trust Godwin and like his other guys more than he had in the past, it seemed to me at least. So I would say you bring him back because he helps you win. That's one. Two, Antonio Brown, you fool. You had cleansed yourself in the eyes of many fans with a Super Bowl championship. No one was talking about, you know, like all the bad and dumb things you've done. No one was talking about it anymore. And then you go ahead and do this, right? Like, you don't even, like, you can remain unvaccinated, but there's a certain price to pay. He didn't want to pay that price, right? It costs me. I got to be inconvenienced. So I don't want to do that. So he gets a fake card. Like, that's idiotic. Now, all that said, I think the league, I consider three games lenient, and I think they're correct to show leniency because when someone takes AB aside and says, yo, what are you doing? And this is a big deal. You shouldn't do that. And then he corrects the behavior right before he's caught. To me, we should be wanting to send a signal to people, not just on this issue, but on most issues, on all issues of importance.
Mm-hmm.
Never too late to do the right thing. You can always start doing the right thing. And if you do, I think we should incentivize people. We should send that message. It's okay. It's not that you don't bear any responsibility for what you've already done, but I think the court in this case, the NFL, should show leniency. And it seems to me they did.
Yeah, they did. But what about the angle of the team? In that, you know, you say to the players in the locker room, you know, he gives us our best chance to win a Super Bowl again.
We
can make an example of him if we want to, But this is professional football, you know, and things are bent. Rules are bent, you know, for certain people. There, as Jimmy Johnson once said, 53 rules for 53 different players. So, you know, what do you ultimately do if you're Bruce Arians?
Well, I mean, my suspicion would be that he'd have the support of the locker room.
Yeah, because, I do too.
Because Antonio Brown is a baller. Mm-hmm. You know, like he and by the way, one of the things, it's I'm not saying he's a sociopath, but like this is that kind of behavior, the way he's cool under pressure. And Antonio Brown's a clutch player. He really doesn't care what other people think.
Right.
He doesn't care. That's one of the problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't conform to societal norms that are good, that are in place for a reason, because he just doesn't care. He doesn't seem to care about anyone other than himself. It doesn't seem to, anyway, from where I'm sitting. I might be wrong, but that's what it seems like. And that actually, I think, helps him under pressure, where other players seem to feel that pressure. He doesn't, you know, and so not only is he a baller, but when it matters most, he's a baller. And, you know, so he did the crime, he's going to do the time, and when he's eligible, it seems to me a pretty good bet his teammates are going to want him back.
Yeah, I mean, it's the old saying, if you could play, you can play. And Steve Howe, who had multiple drug suspensions, got 7 shots to come back and play Major League Baseball. So, yeah.
Yeah, but also, like, what is the point of disqualifying someone permanently, right? Like, the only thing it seems to me, is it just punishment for punishment's sake? That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, well,
it seems to me, because you want to change future behavior and of others also who are watching. And I think the fact in this case that he wound up getting rid of the card and getting vaccinated, that behavior should be rewarded in some way, and this is one of the ways it can be.
Okay. Let me get to the college football while we're on the moral high ground here, and what we make of Brian Kelly leaving his team when it was still in position to be in the college football playoff, and if some crazier things had happened on the final weekend of the season, they would be. Is he within his rights to do? I mean, obviously he is, according to the rule book, but morally, is he doing the right thing in jumping to LSU when he did?
No, but let me say this. There can be a moral or an ethical infraction, mm-hmm. and you just simply have the low ground. And it is a piece of behavior that most rational people would nevertheless undertake, right? Like, so if you have 10 years, $95 million on the table and they want an answer, and your current team ain't going to go over 3 years, there's good reason to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a gap of, I don't know, $70 million. And the question is, will you, in order to get that $70 million, will you, you know, commit some kind of moral infraction, not of the highest order, right? But it is a lower level moral infraction in order to get the $70 million, like almost everyone who ever lived would say, yeah, it'd be foolish not to. So yes, I think he has the moral low ground here. And yes, I understand the behavior.
Yeah, I do too. And there's, you know, the college football used to have signing period in February, and now they moved it up to December. There's been talk that they want to move it back. This would prevent this. I don't know if it would, because what you're seeing now in college football is you get coaches fired in midseason so they can get the jump on hiring the next guy before the season ends. And the groundwork was being laid, obviously, with Orgeron being told, you know, a month and a half ago he wasn't coming back, that they were going to go out and get Brian Kelly. So I think this is going to go on no matter what college football does.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Everything you just said is exactly right.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, it's unsurprising. Whatever kind of judgment you pass, it's unsurprising.
Yeah. The playoffs, what do you think? You like the to me, it was kind of obvious what we have.
Yep.
And if Alabama beats Cincinnati by 4 touchdowns, I say, so what? This is what you had to have here.
I totally agree. I'll also say Michigan is in position to, you know, have the greatest season in their history. So you lose, and partly because you lose to Michigan State close, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's part of the drama. You lose to your in-state rival close in a game in which you're favored, and follow that up against Ohio State that Harbaugh's never beaten. Ohio State, who waxed Michigan State, right? And you beat Ohio State. If you could follow that up, you don't have the letdown against Iowa. If you can follow that up by going through the 2 best teams in the SEC when it looks like they're headed for a collision course, if you can beat Georgia, which is not impossible, given what Alabama just did to that Georgia defense, and given Michigan's defense, and you could follow that up by figuring out a way to beat Alabama, oh my God, what a season for Michigan. You know, that said, most people, I think, are correctly thinking this comes down to a rubber match between Alabama and Georgia. Yeah. And I would just caution people who have a recency bias, oh, it's Saban and Alabama's back on the da-da-da-da. Georgia could easily win that rubber match. That'd be a great championship game.
I think that's what it's going to be. But your narrative there on Harbaugh is great because, you know, a year ago, oh, God, he stayed too long. It hasn't worked out. It's been a disaster. And if he wins the national championship by beating Alabama, wow.
You got to beat Ohio State, and you got to make some hay in the playoff. Like, eventually, oh, it's not happening until it happens, right?
Yeah.
So let's see how he follows that. If he even loses close to Georgia or gets to the championship game, that's an unbelievable success for Michigan this year.
No question. Always good to talk, Max. Talk next week. Thanks.
Okay, brother.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.